new investor, new operator to North Slope, and they had a history of unlocking resources from mature oil fields.
BP sells some of its oil fields on the North Slope. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, April 22nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, lawmakers are working on an education funding deal.
It will come together really as quickly as we can find consensus in the building over either today, tomorrow, or throughout the coming week.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by BP Alaska, committed to the state of Alaska through investment, production, and jobs for future generations of Alaskans. More at alaska.bp.com. And by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow.
BP announced today it's selling some of its assets on the North Slope. The company will sell the aging oil fields Endicott and North Star to Hillcorp, a company that is developing oil and gas wells in Cook Inlet. Hillcorp will also buy a 50% interest in two other fields, Milne Point and Liberty. Dawn Patience is a spokeswoman for BP Alaska. She says the sale is an opportunity for Alaska to bring new partners to the North Slope.
This is part of BP's corporate-wide view that we are good at managing and operating giant oil fields like Prudhoe Bay, and we have a lot of interest in gas value chains such as the Alaska LNG project.
Patience says BP is committed to increasing production under Governor Parnell's oil tax reform, including adding two new rigs at Prudhoe Bay by 2016. Hillcorp came to Alaska in 2012 and now operates 18 oil fields in Cook Inlet after acquiring leases from Chevron and Marathon Oil. Lori Nelson manages external affairs for the company in Alaska. She says Hillcorp wasn't necessarily looking to enter the North Slope.
You know, the acquisitions that we made in Cook Inlet were kind of a full plate, but when opportunities like this come around, it's not our timing, it's the seller's, and we were certainly open to that opportunity, and here we go again.
Nelson says the company plans to extend offers to the vast majority of the 250 BP employees associated with the oil fields Hillcorp is buying. She says the North Slope is a completely different operating area than Cook Inlet, with a separate tax structure. But she says the company is excited by the opportunity.
Long range, we're aiming to reduce operating costs and extend the field life. We certainly intend to increase capital investments in hopes of developing additional oil reserves from the slope.
Nelson says venturing onto the North Slope won't detract from Hillcorp's assets in Cook Inlet. Both BP and Hillcorp are hoping to close the deal by the end of the year, pending regulatory approval. BP also announced today it will submit a new development plan for the Liberty Field, which Hillcorp will own 50% of by the end of 2014. The company suspended work on the offshore project 2 years ago because of financial and other concerns. The development is on a man-made gravel island 4 miles off Alaska's coast. The Alaska State Legislature is still at an impasse over the governor's education bill. A committee tasked with brokering a deal met for the first time today, about 36 hours after the legislature blew past its deadline for gaveling out. The six-person panel spent the day trying to find places where they could agree. They debated whether students should be able to test out of pottery classes, and whether the state should change the rules on teacher tenure. But as committee chair Mike Hawker laid out, the real question is education funding.
Probably the largest sticking point between the Senate approach to this legislation and the House approach was the House's desire to include some element of funding within the BSA and the Senate's preference to not put that money in the BSA, but yet to make substantial commitments for the next 3 years outside of the BSA.
When Hawker says BSA, he means the base student allocation, the amount of money a school gets for each child enrolled. The House version of the bill adds $185 per student to that formula, or about $250 million over 3 years. The Senate included even more money in their bill, but they left it outside of the formula. Education advocates, the state's biggest teachers union, and the legislature's Democratic minority have all pushed for putting the money in the BSA because they believe it gives school districts more security in crafting their budgets. Legislative leadership has said whatever compromise they broker should include some money inside the BSA and some out of it. But when that deal will be brokered is unknown. Committee Chair Mike Hawker, a Republican representative from Anchorage, said they want to take the time needed to rewrite the bill in a way that makes both chambers happy.
This is not going to be something that we rush through. It will come together really as quickly as we can find consensus in the building over either today, tomorrow, or throughout the coming week.
While the legislature has already gone 2 days over their statutory deadline, they can meet for 29 more days without running afoul of the Alaska Constitution. U.S. Senate candidate Joe Miller kicked off his campaign last night in Wasilla before a few hundred supporters. Miller drew cheers as he hit on popular Tea Party themes like abolishing the IRS and ending state surveillance. And as APRN's Liz Ruskin reports, he may be the only candidate in the race with a personalized country western anthem.
Today when Alaska needs anything done, they say, get Joe to do it. Joe Miller's the one.
Miller's kickoff included music videos, two live singers, and conservative talk show host Lars Larson, who broadcast his nationally syndicated show yesterday from Wasilla. Big Lake pastor Ethan Hansen led the opening prayer and later told the crowd he likes Miller for three reasons.
Number three, he understands that we need a transformation in our country. The days are long past when a little tweaking could fix America.
Miller, a veteran and Yale-educated lawyer, says he's the true conservative in the race, although his two Republican rivals are also vying for the title. When he took the stage, Miller portrayed government as an oppressive force that robs people of their liberty and impedes success.
They need to understand that the people have had it. They've had it. That's why you're here today. This is about we the people. It's not about Joe Miller. It's about restoring you to your rightful position, where government is the servant and you are the master.
In 2010, Miller beat Senator Lisa Murkowski in the primary, though she won the general as a write-in. He didn't mention the series of damaging revelations that emerged that year, except for a joke about the time a security team guarding Miller handcuffed a journalist after a campaign event. Miller made the aside as he was introducing his four younger children who were on the stage with him in Wasilla.
James and Christiana, they're all martial arts experts. We learned after the 2010 race, we needed in-house security. So I don't need to bring my handcuffs anymore.
Despite a low campaign profile in recent months, Miller has been raising money. On that score, he's in third place in the three-way Republican race, but gaining on Lieutenant Governor Meade Treadwell. For APRN, this is Liz Ruskin.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a reformed birding skeptic prepares for the seasonal influx of avian visitors.
I talked about birds many times before, and I sort of brushed them off like, all right, that's for nerds. What are you talking about birds for?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Enjoy a lunchtime talk with former Google Energy Policy Executive Dan Riker on Friday, May 2nd during the 2014 Business of Clean Energy in Alaska Conference at the Dena'ina Center. Hear how Alaska can become a world leader in the fast-growing renewable energy industry. Individual tickets for this keynote luncheon can be purchased at bceaconference.com or 929-7770. Clean energy, it's everyone's business. This message sponsored by REAP.
The Anchorage Police Department is using two new systems to communicate with the public about crime in the city. One is a crime mapping system, and the other allows city residents to receive messages directly from the department. APRN intern Jolene Elmendarez has the story.
Regional analysis and information data sharing, called Raids Online, is an intricate system that allows users to not only view a plotted map of crimes within the city, but customized email updates about crimes and areas they're most concerned with. Brian Moorberg, APD crime analyst, recently gave a how-to session on the program.
Say I want to find out what crimes are happening at my house or my business. I can sign up for crime alerts, and it brings up a window and it says, enter your information, confirm your email, put in your address. What radius do you want? You can change that in here and say, I'm really interested in everything only within 500 feet, or I want everything within a mile of my house. How often do you want to get these updates? What time of day do you want to get these updates? Select what crimes you're interested in, click sign up, and it will start sending you emails as often as you tell it to.
Crimes involving victims are randomly plotted within 600 feet of where they took place to protect the privacy of the victims, and there are some slight differences between public and APD access. Moorberg says this allows the department to be proactive in finding crime trends and seeing if efforts to reduce crime in certain areas are working. The software is also able to essentially predict when some crimes will take place.
One of the ones that RAIDS says that it works best on is burglaries. And based on an algorithm, it tells us, okay, we think next week burglaries are going to happen here. And it puts a density map up on the screen, but then it draws a little circle that says, this is where we think it's going to happen.
Right now, the department is updating information to the system once a day. But Moorberg says the department plans more frequent updates to provide the most current information possible.
Goal is anywhere from 3 to 4 times a day is we'd like to upload it. And it costs no more extra to upload more often. It's just a matter of data transfer.
The system currently includes a year's worth of data, but the department plans to add crimes dating back to 1998 within the next 6 months. The annual $7,600 price tag is paid with property acquisitions. The RAIDS online launch comes just a few weeks after the department introduced a new mass communication system, Nixle, which functions separate from the mapping system. APD spokesperson Danny Myron says the system sends notifications to subscribers via text, email, or the web messaging. She says there are 3 categories of messages, including alerts, advisories, and community messages.
Alerts are, if you envision kind of the highest level, this is the message that there's a sense of urgency. So envision maybe an abducted child, something of that nature. The next level is an advisory message. Police activity. There's a traffic accident on the Glen Highway that's closed down all lanes of traffic. Community level message is more general information, but it doesn't maybe rise to a level of urgency.
APD is using a free version of Nixle. It's being moderated primarily through the Public Affairs Office, though they expect to expand usage to dispatchers so residents can receive real-time updates. Myron says the department might consider upgrading to a paid version if extra features seem necessary to successfully communicate with the public on a mass scale. In Anchorage, I'm Jolene Almendadez.
The largest herring fishery in Alaska is the Togiak Sacro herring fishery, and many stakeholders are preparing for an early start. But at least one expert thinks the price may be so low this year it won't be worth fishing. KDLG's Mike Mason has the preview.
Tim Sands is the area management biologist for the Togiak District, and he previewed the upcoming Togiak Sacro herring fishery during a presentation Saturday in Dillingham as part of the annual Business of Fish workshops. Sands says it appears that 6 seafood processors will be participating in this year's fishery. Ocean Beauty Seafoods decided to drop out, but Sands confirms that Silver Bay Seafoods will enter the fishery.
It looks like if every processor took every fish they wanted to take, we'd take about 24,000 tons of the quota. So going into the season, it doesn't look like we're going to take the whole quota, and some of the companies might dial back their harvest a little bit. I talked to somebody the other day, and there's a strong feeling out there that if we go over 20,000 tons of harvest in Togiak, the market will really be hurting.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is forecasting that the total herring biomass this year will be over 157.4 thousand tons. That's about 20% above the recent 10-year average. The allocated quota for this year's Togiak Sacro herring fishery is just over 27.8 thousand tons. Right now, the processors, fishermen, and managers are all just waiting for the arrival of the herring in the Togiak District. Sands confirms the first aerial survey of the district will take place this Thursday.
It definitely looks like things are going to be early relative to the last 6 or 7 years. Since 2006, we haven't started the fishery really until after May 10. It could go before May 1st this year.
After herring are spotted in the Togiak District, ADF&G then seeks to document a threshold biomass level of 35,000 tons. Sands confirms that once the threshold biomass level is observed, the department will open up the fishery. At least one prominent Alaska Native leader in the Bristol Bay region is lobbying to keep the fishery closed this year. Robin Samuelson Jr. is the chairman of the board for the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation. He's also the chairman of the board for Ocean Beauty Seafoods and a prominent commercial fisherman. He believes the price for herring taken in the upcoming Togiak Sacro herring fishery will be down. During a speech Saturday in Dillingham, he suggested the price will only be between $50 to $65 a ton.
It's not worth going over there for. And a lot of the fishermen that are going over said, we need to hold our spot in case the price comes up. I personally feel them fish are more important to the ecosystem at $50, $65 a ton than catching them. And we need to look at how can we capitalize on that market.
Normally, the herring taken in the Togiak Sacro fishery are worth quite a bit less than the herring taken in other herring fisheries like the Sitka Sacro fishery. It appears the price for herring in the Sitka fishery came in at about $150 a ton. That's way down from last year's price of $600 a ton. That decline is leading to the speculation that the price for herring from the Togiak fishery will be down compared to last year's initial grounds price of about $100 a ton. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
The legislature approved new regulations last year for cruise ships to release wastewater into Alaska's oceans. The state developed a permit process based on those regulations. Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation's Division of Water Director Michelle Hale stopped in Ketchikan to talk about the changes. KRBD's Layla Carey reports.
With the new regulations in place, cruise ships that travel through Alaska's Inside Passage will have better wastewater treatment systems than some coastal communities. Hale says no untreated sewage is allowed to be dumped anymore, and the legislation closed so-called donut holes, parts of the ocean that were just outside of state jurisdiction. The main activity that the new regulations now allow is the use of mixing zones.
And that's very similar to all other industries and municipalities in the state of Alaska. So they all have mixing zones. It's a little bit controversial relative to cruise ships. It's a very standard practice when we are actually permitting wastewater discharges.
Ketchikan has numerous mixing zones for the various wastewater permits allowing discharge into the Tongass Narrows. They include the city of Ketchikan's Charcoal Point Wastewater Treatment Facility, Point Higgins School, seafood processors, the shipyard, the Coast Guard, Valner View Mobile Home Park, and the airport, among many others. Mixing zones allow discharge to exceed the standards for certain contaminants as long as the standards are met within a certain distance of that initial discharge. In other words, it becomes diluted fairly quickly after it hits the water. Hale says mixing zones for cruise ships are a little different because ships move.
The cruise ship defines two different regulatory mixing zones, one for discharge underway and one for discharge at 6 knots or less or stationary. And primarily that 6 knots or less or stationary is for stationary vessels, but we kind of had to make a break point. So if you're going faster than 6 knots, you get covered under one mixing zone. If you're going slower, you're covered under another.
Hale says some members of the public were concerned that the permits for cruise ships wouldn't protect the ocean enough, but she says her division wrote the permits in a way that treats cruise ships like other wastewater discharge systems.
When we do our modeling and when we establish limits, we do that so that the water is protected, so that water quality is protected for the uses that that water is used for.
Hale says the water must be safe enough for a fish to pass through the area within 15 minutes and not be affected. The comment period closes May 23rd. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, earning Alaska's trust for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. It's time for the Healthy Futures Challenge. Pull out the jump ropes or go sledding with the family and get out and play. Get moving with activities the whole family enjoys. Find out if your child's elementary school is participating in the Healthy Futures Challenge. Healthy kids are happy kids. Inspire your kids to get out and play every day. For more ways to get active, visit playeveryday.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Tlingit Elder Cyril George Sr. has died at the age of 92. A fisherman, boat builder, master storyteller, and a man of great faith, George passed away last week at the Alaska Native Medical Center in Anchorage. KTOO's Rosemary Alexander has more.
Cyril George was of the Deshaton Raven Beaver clan of Angoon and lived in the Admiralty Island community most of his life. Son Richard George recalls his father as a young man to be a successful seiner, halibut, and herring fisherman. He also served his tiny community on the Angoon City Council, as mayor, as a member of the board of directors for Kootsnuwu, Angoon's village corporation. He was on Sealaska Regional Corporation's first board of directors in 1972. Richard George remembers his father as a strong man.
He made decisions which always seemed to be the proper decision. That's what I was impressed with when I was young.
Cyril George attended Sheldon Jackson High School and College in the late 1930s, where he became a machinist and learned to build boats. The Presbyterian school was tasked with helping Tlingit shipwright Andrew Hope build the Princeton Hall, a replacement vessel for the church mission fleet.
I wasn't the only one that had this feeling of an enormous undertaking when I started to build this boat. I could weld. I did everything in a machine shop. But I was with him all the way from lining up the motor, the shaft, setting up the electrical.
It took a year to complete the Princeton Hall. Then in 1941, just a few days after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, the boat was to be launched. It had already been conscripted by the U.S. Navy. In this 2007 interview with George on the Princeton Hall, he recalled that all the Sheldon Jackson students trooped down to the harbor to watch the launch.
When the Navy started to tow it away, all the kids were crying. I was crying. I don't think there was anybody that wasn't crying.
After the war, the Princeton Hall was returned to the Presbyterians, and it traveled southeast Alaska waters for years, going village to village. While George helped build it, he'd never been on the boat. Many years later, he had a number of cruises on the Princeton Hall after it was purchased by the late Bill Ruddy. Bill and Kathy Ruddy became close friends with Cyril George, the boat builder, the musician, and Tlingit storyteller. George gradually began to lose his hearing. For several years, Kathy Ruddy was what she describes as a stenographer, typing out conversations for him. The hearing loss didn't slow him down.
For a guitarist and a really excellent musician, you know, hearing loss is a very poignant thing. And so the fact that he maintained this constant sense of gratitude, you know, even as his hearing was failing, is just a tribute to his character.
As a fluent Tlingit speaker, George liked to teach his language and often went to Tlingit classes at the University of Alaska Southeast, taught by Lance Twitchell.
And Tlingit, he'd tell us, "I just feel wonderful whenever I'm looking upon your faces and you guys are learning our language."
In interviews over the years, Cyril George talked about a battle with alcohol, which he won with prayer and his faith. A memorial service is Wednesday at 6 p.m. at Elizabeth Paratovich Hall in Juneau. George will be buried on Killisnoo Island near Rangoon. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
Birding season is about to pick up in Alaska, and as APRN's Dave Waldron reports, now is the perfect time to start preparing.
Anchorage resident and bird enthusiast Zach Clark says the city will see a big influx of birds in the next 2 to 6 weeks. He calls this time of year the glory days. But not many years ago, Clark couldn't have cared less about birds.
My supervisor at work had talked about birds many times before, and I sort of brushed him off like, "All right, that's for nerds. What are you talking about birds for?"
That all changed about 4 years ago when Clark bought a house near a greenbelt.
And then I'd wake up in the morning, 6:30, sun shining, and you hear these great songs every day. The next thing I knew, I got sucked into this whole new hobby.
Today, Clark is taking a stroll around Goose Lake. He says even though the birds are still fairly scarce, it's never too early to hone your skills.
Oh yeah, you gotta get your Alaska Bird Sounds album, you know, just play that on a loop when you're driving to and from work. So you work on your ear birding skills.
But we're not hearing anything, and I'm worried we might be in trouble.
No, we're not in trouble, but it is awfully quiet out here. Still frozen over. Hasn't opened up yet for any of the water birds to start making their way here.
Then, almost on cue, we hear something in the distance.
Here we come. My Canadian geese.
Clark says all you need to bird is a pair of eyes and ears. But for those who are really interested, he suggests a few basic items. A pair of binoculars, a field guide, and his favorite, a birding app.
It has the benefit of not only being able to search by color, shape, size, region, time of year, but it also has songs. So if you hear a song but you don't actually see the birds, you can at least play their song back and hear what they sound like. This is a boreal chickadee.
And that reminds Clark of the final piece of equipment you'll need, some headphones.
And the thing that you have to be careful with this is when you're out in the field and you're walking around, you'll want to have like an earbud in so you're not playing it out because the birds will hear this and respond to it. So oftentimes people think it's a good idea to play it so you draw the birds in, which you will, but oftentimes that stresses out the birds because they think someone's in their territory.
But Clark says it's unlikely someone will scold you for doing it. After all, the birding community is a generally polite and welcoming one. But that doesn't mean there aren't hardcore birders out there.
Well, I have never been to one, but they do daily competitions. I've seen the Anchorage Autobahn does something called a birding smackdown at Potter's Marsh, where you get a team together, and then you spend a few hours, and then whoever finds the most species wins the competition.
But on a quiet day like today, there aren't many species to find. Just the occasional bird to remind Clark why he loves being out here.
The great thing about it is you're out hiking, you're walking around Goose Lake, we're watching some magpies fly around with nest material, and you just see these birds out moving around, and it doesn't cost you a penny.
For APRN, I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Mike Mason in Dillingham, Layla Carey in Ketchikan, and Rosemary Alexander in Juneau. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Liz Ruskin, Dave Waldron, and Jolene Almendarez from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Monica Goki. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Alaska Mental Health Trust beneficiaries are important members of our workforce, from healthcare facilities and nonprofit organizations to retail stores and restaurants. Alaskans who are in recovery or experience developmental disabilities, traumatic brain injuries, or mental health conditions are succeeding in the workplace. The Trust encourages businesses to consider ways in which employing trust beneficiaries can be good for business. Learn more at mhtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust. Salmon Love presents the Salmon Haiku Contest through April 30th. Do you have a poetic, funny, and creative Alaska salmon haiku in you like this one? Fresh fry awakens, moving through ripples. Silently, an epic journey blossoms. That's Salmon Love haiku style. Information on how to enter the Salmon Haiku Contest at salmonlove.com. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.